And good afternoon, welcome to Visions in Sound. My name is Rob Daniels. Well, when you first hear direct-to-video sequel, I'm sure you think that the movie is really not going to be all that good. In some cases, you'd be right. However, that's not the case for this film. Return to House on Haunted Hill is a breakthrough. It is one of the first DVDs where you control the outcome of the film, the video equivalent of those choose-your-own-adventure books from the 80s. Return to Haunted House is a sequel to the 1999 film House on Haunted Hill, which in itself was a remake of the 1959 Vincent Price film. Now I had the great opportunity to speak to Friedrich Wiedemann, composer on Return, and I'll get to that in a little bit, but first let's go back to 1999 and have a little bit of a listen to Don Davis's score to The House on Haunted Hill.
Thank you.
I had forgotten how creepily weird that score is. Actually, you're listening to a little bit of The House on Haunted Hill, music by Don Davis. Well, my name is Rob Daniels, and welcome back to Visions in Sound. If you're interested in any of the film, television, or video game music that I do play here on the show, you can contact me here at the station at 884-CKMS. That's 884-2567. You can also try me online at visionsinsound2000@hotmail.com. Well, I'm going to continue on with a little bit more of the music from House on Haunted Hill. We'll also have a little bit of Frederica Wiedemann's score to return to House on Haunted Hill. Also did a little bit of an interview with him. But here's just a little bit more of House on Haunted Hill by Don Davis.
Thank you. Chilling in the Student Life Center, you're listening to CKMS 100.3 FM Radio Waterloo.
And with just a little bit of music from the 1999 film House on Haunted Hill. That's music by Don Davis. Well, welcome back to Visions and Sound as we take a look at the score to Return to House on Haunted Hill. Here is part one of the interview. That'll be back in just a little bit.
Yeah. All right, well, let's start with what is your musical background?
All right, my musical background is I played the violin for about 9 years. I'm obviously from Germany. In Germany, kids grow up with a lot of classical music because that's what your parents listen to most of the time. I fell in love with the Brahms Violin Concerto when I was like 3 or 4 years old, and I really wanted to learn how to play the violin. So when I was 4 years, I got my first quarter-sized violin, you know, the very little ones. And I started to practice and played that for about 9 years. And then, you know, you become a teenager and classical music becomes boring for for the time when you're a teenager. And I started playing jazz guitar, which then, you know, since I was then suddenly getting into jazz that much, I realized how much there is about music and, you know, analysis and you know, how deep this musical field actually is, which you don't really get when you're just playing music, sheet music. But, you know, once you started talking about improvising and chord changes and all that stuff, then I really realized, like, wow, this is a really interesting subject, and I got really grabbed by that. At the same time, my interest in film music grew immensely, especially through the film score Dances with Wolves that came out back then. And that was one of the ones that I, you know, I totally fell in love with and made me realize that film music exists as a media. And ever since, I bought every soundtrack I could possibly get, especially John Barry. I was a huge fan. I had everything from Out of Africa, you know, everything that he had ever done, I tried to get. Then, when I was 18, I finished school in Germany and applied for Berklee College of Music in Boston. Mm-hmm. And got accepted and went straight there after school, stayed there for a couple of years to get my bachelor's degree in film scoring. After that, I headed right to Los Angeles and started working.
Now, you mentioned John Barry and the John Barry scores. What was it about John Barry's style that appealed to you?
You know, I think it was a funny combination of me being incredibly in love with Indians at the same time. You know, and then watching Dances with Wolves, and I just loved the movie, and then had the soundtrack, and I listened to it more and more, and then, I mean, it's one of the most beautiful scores I think ever written, with amazing melodies, and the way he's treating landscapes and everything, and that just, the epicness of it just totally grabbed me on an emotional level. Then, you know, listening to other John Barry scores, not talking about the Bond stuff at all, just mm-hmm. I realized that he's just got an interesting, a very, very nice feel for melody and grandness in his music that nobody else had at the time, I thought. So I think that's one of the things in his music that really got to my heart is the grandness and the melodic treatment of his scores.
Okay. So what is the first thing you do when you begin to write a score?
The first thing is, usually I get involved very early helping the editors to get temp ideas, you know? Mm-hmm. Usually what I do is I read the script, obviously, if available, and I meet with the editors, I meet with the director, and get their idea of what they're looking for. And then what we're trying to do is we're trying to find scores, pre-existing scores, that will help them cut the film to a level where I can start scoring. And that's usually the first step. And then once that is established, like if we know, okay, we're going to have an orchestral score or we're going to have an electronic score, that kind of thing, then I sit down and create a palette of sounds, you know, electronics, things that I'm creating from scratch that nobody else has and uses. And that usually, that's a couple of weeks of production needed and recording people and also sketching themes. And then once I have that, I build little theme sequences, you know, just not the picture, just very rough, just the themes. Yeah, and then I take them and I plug them into the movie, like in very broad strokes, trying to find, you know, places where themes may work. Because that way you get a very good structure of your score. You know, rather than going from A to B, you sort of get a broad stroke and a broad idea where your themes can live and how they can develop with the characters and with the story. And then in the end, I think it makes a lot more sense, you know, if you look at the whole movie as an entire film.
So now, when you've also been wrote some additional music for some of John Frizzell's scores. When writing additional music, how closely do you work with? Well, in this case, you'd work with John, but how closely would you work with the other composer?
Oh, very closely. Usually, the way it works is that we don't even get to talk much to the producer or director in a case like that. It is more about John's basically, or the other composer in that case is the director for us. Mm-hmm. If we do this kind of thing, you know, because they are obviously the ones in charge, so they are going to be the ones giving us notes and revisions and all that stuff.
Now, just taking a quick step back to the previous question about beginning to write a score, you mentioned temp scores.
Yes.
Do you like temp scores, or do you prefer not to have them?
You know, sometimes they have their goods and their bads. The good is that you can get everybody, since, you know, on a movie there's so many people involved, from, you know, starting from the studio, the producers, the directors, and everybody, and just to get one solid set of opinions about the sound of the movie is very important, because you may end up going down the wrong road and pleasing only, you know, half the people, and then on the dub stage you end up, you know, hearing things about, okay, I didn't know the score's going into this direction. And so I think it helps to just establish sort of a direction on where to go. From there on, I think there's still a lot of flexibility, and you definitely have to try to not sound like the temp music in any way. That is a big thing I'm trying to do always. Like, I'm trying to mute it as much as I can, but it really helps to just get everybody on the same page and then move forward very quickly.
So how did you first come to work with John Frizzell?
That happened through actually Berklee College of Music. I had very good references when I left college from my professors, and when I moved to LA, I just, you know, did the usual thing, sent out demos to people and try to network and get contacts, and 3 months later I got a call from John, and he had heard good things about me from Berklee College of Music and hired me on the next day. So it was definitely a Berklee connection. Without them I would not have gotten this job.
Okay. Now you've also done some orchestration with John as
yes.
well. What is the job of the orchestrator?
The job of the orchestrator is John is a very, he's already an incredibly detailed composer. Whatever he writes is pretty much finished, orchestrated. It's very, very close to the final. So, you know, I'm doing less of the actual final finale orchestrating that orchestrators do. I'm orchestrating his mock-ups. You know, I'm making his mock-ups sound really good and helping him on that orchestration level rather than the final that goes to the scoring stage. But in general, orchestrators, what they do is they get the sequences from the composer, the MIDI sequences, right, mm-hmm. from the computer, and mostly in John's case, especially, they're very close to the final, and they just basically have to tweak it here and there and, you know, use their judgment on certain instrumentations and whether to use trumpets or not, and, you know, all that kind of thing. You know, a lot of it gets changed in the scoring station yet anyway, but just so, you know, they are the skilled people that know about all the instrument ranges and in which range they sound crisp, and which range they sound soft, and how they blend nicely with each other. So they're experts in that field, and they can really make a score sound amazing by knowing all this knowledge.
Now, do you work with the music editor as well on the film?
Yes, we usually work with music editors. You know, we have worked with many, many people, and they're a great help. on a project, because, you know, then we can really focus on writing and getting the score in good shape, and then they can take care of the technical aspects on the dub stage, especially. Okay. And in temping, if the time provides it.
Well, now, your most recent work is actually The Return to the House on Haunted Hill.
Yes.
How did you come to work on that film?
Well, obviously, you may see also in the credits that John Frizzell has worked a lot for Joel Silver and the Dark Castle, mm-hmm. Silver Pictures gang at Warner Brothers. And, you know, we heard that that project became available, and John went in and put in a great word for me with these producers. And on the next day, I was on that film, scoring it. So John helped me immensely to get that going by recommending me to the Dark Castle crew. So, and obviously, you know, I sent in music too, and they liked that. That was obviously the other step part of it.
So how important is the demo process? Are you sending demos out all the time, or are you just sending demos to specific films you want to work on?
I'm sending a lot of demos because, you know, that's part of our process. We just sort of get ourselves out there as much as we can. You know, obviously, if there's a film that you really, really like and you really want to do, you're trying to not just send out a demo, but also make some calls. Maybe, you know, offer to either score a scene or, you know, tempt a scene for them to give them an idea of what you would like to do with the movie. You know, obviously, you get more aggressive with a film that is really, really something you want to do. But the sending out demos is part of our daily routine. You know, it's just... You just do it all the time.
Do you approach a horror score differently than you would, let's say, just a regular drama?
Yes, I think dramas require a lot less of a palette building and a creating of a very unique palette, you know, because horror films are obviously, in for the large part, very atmospheric and scary, and you have to find new scary sounds. You know, you can't go back to old sample libraries that everybody else has, but you have to create, like, new, interesting sounds that keep the tension going. And I think that's something, on a drama, your palette is pretty much set to begin with. There's not that much you can do in terms of creating sounds. So I think in that case, I would definitely approach it differently. On the drama, I would focus a lot more on thematic material, trying to structure it in a very good way that it helps the drama to approach its climax and for the ending and all that stuff.
Okay. Well, now, Return to House on Haunted Hill is a sequel, do you make any references, musical references, to the first film?
Basically, yes, absolutely. Victor Garcia, the director, asked me specifically to incorporate a few things from the 99 version that Don Davis scored, mm-hmm. especially the House on Haunted Hill theme, which is on his soundtrack, the track number one. So I had to use that theme in pivotal moments in the movie. Basically, in very pivotal moments in the story, I'm referring to Don Davis's theme, and, you know, some people may actually remember it and then feel a certain revelation when these moments happen. Mm-hmm. The other thing we tried to incorporate was the idea of the voices. Now, we didn't have the budget to record a choir like they did in 1999. I was very creative with my own voice and samples, and I found very interesting audio files with vocals that I used in, I think, a very cool way, which is very different than the 99 version, but I think the general concept of using voices within that house was kept alive, because the house, essentially, what we were trying to say is that these ghosts that live in the house and the house itself, they are alive and they're around you. Mm-hmm. So these voices that keep evolving around the score sort of gave you that feeling of, okay, this house is alive. There's something is happening around these people in this house. And we kept that idea as well.
Yeah, you mentioned that there wasn't the budget on for a large choir. What did you do to get that sort of sound? Or did
well, I put myself in the booth, you know, with a microphone, mm-hmm. and I did a lot of research for vocal sample libraries, and then bought them, and then took those sample libraries, and I engineered them in a different way so that they sound completely different than they used to.
Okay.
I sort of I messed them up in quotes if you want to say it that way, just sort of, you know, just to make it sound more interesting, and I put it in the surrounds, and it's evolving around you know and all that stuff. So I was being very creative with the material that I could get.
What's the software you're using? Like, are you using Pro Tools or
I use Pro Tools for the editing and the dub stage part of the scoring process, but for the writing process, I use Logic. Back then, it was Logic 7, and now it's Logic 8. It just came out with a new version.
Now, when preparing cues for a CD release, are there any factors that you take into account other than the length of the CD?
Absolutely. I think, from my experience, it seems like people like to have soundtracks that it has to be a good listen. Like, you have to pop it in, and it has to be just a good listen. Like, you start on track one and you end on the end, and you feel you've gone through this journey of the movie. And I think a part of that is also staying in a chronological order. I try to do that because then you can always imagine the movie in your head as it progresses. And I also try to, you know, use the more thematic and interesting pieces of music rather than the more ambient and droney ones, because those are obviously more interesting to listen to when you listen to the soundtrack in your car or at home. I think that's very important. The length, I don't think, is that important. I think as long as it stays interesting and changing and moving around and, you know, keep intriguing the listener, it's more important than having a very long score.
So do you prefer to start with, you know, track one, main title, track two?
Yeah, I mean, there's a little liberty in that, you know. I mean, in House of Hotel, I moved the main titles to the very end.
Oh, okay.
But more for the fact because it's kind of a remix of all the cues that existed in the movie. So I felt it made more sense to have that in the end, because then when people listen to it, they will actually realize, oh, okay, this is like sort of a medley of everything that has been going on in the score. And I'm starting with the second track of the movie as opposed to the very first one. The rest of it is pretty much in order as the movie went, and I think that makes a lot of sense. Just, it's, you know, when you have seen the movie and you listen to the soundtrack again, you can remember which scene went into which scene, and you see the images of the movie maybe back.
And I'll have part two of that interview in just a minute, but here is a little bit of Frederick Wiedemann's score to Return to House on Haunted Hill.
Thank you.
with just a little bit of Frederick Wiedemann's score to The Return to House on Haunted Hill. It's some fantastic stuff. Anyway, if you're interested in any of the film, television, or video game music that I do play here on Visions and Sound, you can contact me here at the station at 884-CKMS. That's 884-2567. You can also try me online at visionsinsound2000@hotmail.com. Well, here is part two of the interview I did with Frederick, and we'll be back in just a little bit to wrap up the program and to play a little bit more of the music from Return to the House on Haunted Hill.
How much in advance do you know that you're actually getting a CD done with your score?
It hasn't happened to me that often yet, but in this case, I knew about 2 or 3 months ago. I got a call from Varese Sarabande, and they said they would like to do this. And then, you start editing the album together, and then there's a mastering session. Then next thing you know, it's in the stores. Okay. So, it depends on how much time you have. Sometimes movies finish, and then 2 weeks later, they are in the theaters. So obviously, in that case, the whole process is accelerated a lot. But since we finished in July with the mix and everything, we have plenty of time to get it all figured out and make a good selection of tracks and stuff.
Now, how much time were you given to score House on Haunted Hill, or Return to House on Haunted Hill?
Yeah, I had a lot of time. I got on the project in late November 2006. Mm-hmm. And then they were still very deep in editing, so I didn't do much in that phase. But once I got going in January, I think I was pretty deep into it for about 3 months. Now, the interesting thing about this movie, I'm not sure if you read about it, but it has this interactive feature, which is exclusive from Blu-ray and HD DVD. Mm-hmm. And what you can do is you can watch the movie, and as you're watching it, there are certain moments in the film where the frame freezes, and you ask the question of how you want the plot to proceed. So, for example, you ask the question, should this character go through this door or through the other door? And you have to make a choice with your remote control. And depending on your choice, people die in different places and in different times in the movie. So, overall, you have, I think, with all these questions, you have 96 different possibilities to watch this one film.
Wow.
People dying in different places, or surviving, for that matter. And also, you can change the ending, in several ways, the way you want it. And you can watch it over and over, and always with a different ending. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a little video game. So it's very interactive, and it's, I think, a very cool concept. And I believe it's the first time this has been done sort of on a level like this. And it was very challenging for all of us, because technically nobody did really know how to make that happen, because it was such a new concept. But, with a lot of long nights, we figured it all out, and I think the end result is pretty stunning.
Mm-hmm. So how do you keep your musical vision in kind of this constantly changing film?
Yeah, it was very difficult, because sometimes you're in one situation with a character in a certain mood, then the question comes, and depending on your choice, the mood changes. Either the tension releases because he's going to live for a little longer, or he's going to die right away.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to. The music always just keeps going. Even during the question, music is always going. Music builds into the question. The question comes. Music is going, and then depending on when you make your choice, music smoothly transitions back to the next piece of music into the scene that you chose. So it was very challenging to make those transitions smooth and sort of even, so you don't feel really that you asked a question. So that it's one unified process. The whole watching the film, it doesn't just stop and sound stops, but you stay in the mood of the movie by having sound keep going through the questions. So it was very challenging, and the sound editors at Daintrax and I, we spent a lot of time to make it work, and it was very challenging, but I think we're all very proud of the end result.
Okay. Well, now, as a composer, your job is, of course, to write music. However, do you use silence as a composing tool?
Yes, absolutely. I think silence helps to make the next incoming cue have a much bigger impact. So you have to find moments also in the movie that you need to have silence to make your next cue feel that much more of an impact than the other cues. Now, in horror movies, that becomes difficult, because they tend to have a lot of music from front to back.
Mm-hmm.
But another movie I scored recently called The Indian, a little independent, that has been that has won several awards and festivals recently. Mm-hmm. In that movie, that was a drama, and in that movie, it was very important to have a lot of space and then only select very certain moments of score that you can use to really say something very important to the audience, you know. And the absence of music obviously makes that moment so much more important. So I think it's a very important thing to consider about mm-hmm. scoring.
All right. Well, how would a score that you write today differ from one you wrote at the beginning of your career?
Well, I think I've learned a lot about structuring, you know, music. Because when you're starting out, you know, when you get a job, you start from the beginning and you just score to the end and you try to get done and everything. But now I think it's become sort of a habit for me to first think about structure more than anything. And thematic development, and I think that is something that I have grown a lot in, just getting that, getting a big shape of the score going, which I think is very important.
What does the future hold for you?
Well, we will see. I'm very excited about the soundtrack. This is my first release, so I'm hoping that you know, a lot of good things will happen through that.
Mm-hmm.
Today is a big day for me because it came out, and I'm excited to read the first reviews that mm-hmm. you know will show up on the web and. And we will see. I'm continuing to do a lot of work for John Frizzell here, and I think there's a lot coming in the future.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. I really appreciate the time you've given me today.
No problem. My pleasure.
And here's some more of the music from Return to the House on Haunted... It's Return to House on Haunted Hill, not Return to the House on Haunted Hill. It doesn't matter. It's just a the. Anyway... with that in mind, if you're interested in any of the film, television, or video game music that I do play here on Visions and Sound, you can contact me here at the station at 884-CKMS. That's 884-2567. You can also try me online at visionsinsound2000@hotmail.com. Here's some more of Frederick Wiedemann's score to Return to House on Haunted Hill. Thank you. Well, that's it for me. Hope you've enjoyed today's program. If you're looking for a copy of the score, you can find it on Varese Saraband Records, and you can go on the Varese Saraband website, and you can also find it on iTunes. That's it for me. So I'll see you next week, and enjoy the weekend. Here's some more music from The Return to the House on Haunted Hill.